The final paper discussed at our journal club was an article in the June 3rd issue of Cancer by a frequent guest on this series, Dr. Tony Howe. The paper compared anastrozole versus fulvestrin in advanced breast cancer and demonstrated equivalent survival for the two therapies. Dr. Dresner presented a patient from his practice who exemplifies the clinical relevance of these data.
This patient presented at age 66 with a stage 1, grade 2, 1.9 ductal carcinoma, 0 out of 14 nodes positive. She was strongly estrogen receptor positive and PR positive and HER2 negative. She was treated with lumpectomy, radiation, and then received 5 years of tamoxifen. That took us to 2 years ago, and at that time, based on the MA17 study, I discussed extended adjuvant therapy with letrozole. The patient at that time already had an established diagnosis of osteopenia and was on Fosamax and refused because she was concerned about the additional potential risk of loss of bone density. Unfortunately, a year after that, she came in complaining of left hip pain. An X-ray showed a small lytic lesion in the left femoral neck. PET scan was positive in the same site with no other sites. Needle biopsy was positive for adenocarcinoma. Estrogen receptor on the needle was actually positive. CEA was elevated. CA27 was normal. At that point, we discussed hormone therapy, and she was started on letrozole and changed from her Fosamax to Zometa, given on a quarterly basis. She also received local radiation to the left hip. Orthopod did not feel it needed to be pinned. 3 months later, her CA was down. Her left hip pain was improved.
And so just getting back to the paper in Cancer, and just briefly, I'll summarize what I thought were the key points. Of course, these trials comparing fulvestrin to anastrozole in the second-line setting after patients have received tamoxifen have already reported in terms of response rate and progression-free survival. And this is a survival paper showing essentially that the survival was the same with the two approaches. I think most people kind of came away from the prior studies thinking they were also the same, although there were some questions or claims about whether fulvestrin led to longer responses. The other thing that was kind of interesting about this paper when they looked at survival was that about 10 to 20% of the patients were still alive 5 years after randomization, and that the median survival in the two groups was roughly 27, 28 months. Chuck, any comments on this case and then on the paper?
I think the paper uses two different studies that were pooled. There were differences between those trials, but survival is survival, and I think that when you put the two together, most of those differences disappear, and I think that the use of either fulvestrin or an aromatase inhibitor, in this case anastrozole, probably lead to similar results. So I think that fulvestrin is a probably very good alternative to AI therapy, especially in two groups of people. One, those who can't afford the AIs, which is a very large population of patients, and also the group of patients where you are concerned about the reliability of the patient in taking the medication.
Of course, this case also relates to the decision that was made not to use letrozole at the five-year point. Dave, did you feel any sense of regret, or the patient any sense of regret about that? Well, it's always easy to do sort of Monday morning quarterbacking, but...
Yeah, clearly when the relapse happened, we both sort of thought about it, and she had stage one disease. That group showed some benefit, but it wasn't great, and it was hard to make a really strong case in light of her osteopenia, where she was more concerned about breaking bones and... felt she was not in trouble after 5 years.
Yeah, but I mean, I think that this underscores the artifactual nature of the treatment. I mean, the disease was there 4 years, you know, a year ago. It's just that if you treated her with the letrozole, you probably would have found it 2.5 years from now as opposed to finding it a year from now. Now you treat her with letrozole. I mean, it's been there all along. It's not clear that you're going to cure her of her disease by adding letrozole. So you would have prolonged her disease-free survival, and that might you know, you might not know about this yet, but she had a good response to letrozole. And this is why it's so hard to show a survival advantage in MA17 for low-risk patients, because you can treat them. I would just underscore Chuck's point about, you know, the utility of fulvestrant. But aside from those patients who, for understandable reasons, cannot afford a prescription medication, or who, for unusual reasons, would somehow show up for doctor's appointments once a month to get a shot but would not take a pill every morning, I can't think of why you would prefer that to the convenience of an orally available agent. So I would use, as was done in this case, an orally available aromatase inhibitor 9 times out of 10 in patients as described here, though I think fulvestrant would be a legitimate option.
Although it's interesting, our group did a survey of 260 women with metastatic breast cancer. In fact, your colleague Ann Partridge had consulted with us on this. And one of the many, many things that we asked these patients was, if you were in a situation where you could choose between a monthly intramuscular injection or a daily pill, all things being equal in terms of side effects and toxicity, what would you prefer? And about a third actually preferred the injection. Leslie Fallowfield in the UK, surveying women in the UK, found, I think, about 25%. One of the things that was interesting about the survey is it documented how frequently these women were in the oncologist's office anyhow. They were in there for bisphosphonates, blood work, et cetera, et cetera. My question is, do you actually ask patients what they prefer?
I do offer them an option, and these data support that as an option, and they are coming in typically monthly to my clinic for the zoledronate therapy. But, you know, this is a reasonable area for choice based on the preferences.
Chuck?
One company actually had a think tank meeting to present their data on patient compliance with oral aromatase inhibitors, and it was frightening that from the standpoint of looking at prescription records and the actual prescriptions filled, et cetera, that the number of patients taking prescribed aromatase inhibitors was frighteningly low.
Just one comment. In the study, interestingly, they showed the same incidence pretty much of hot flashes. My experience has been that the Basilidex really has a lower incidence compared to most of the AIs. I see a higher complaint, just at least in personal experience.
It's interesting. Chuck, what's your experience?
Yeah, Basilidex has been a very well-tolerated drug. I'm less concerned about the hot flash issue as I am about the joint pain issue. I mean, we have lots of patients on each of the AIs who actually go off study or off the drug because of joint pain.
And in fact, one of the things that they did find here that was a difference was less joint pain in the patients getting fulvestrant.
I don't think I've ever had a patient discontinue Fasodex except for disease progression.
I see a lot of people shaking their heads with that one. Richard?
I was at a conference and someone commented that there's concern that the Fasodex may be dosage subtherapeutic, and they're looking at increasing the dose for maybe higher response rates.
Chuck, there are a bunch of trials looking at that question. Do you ever utilize other strategies in a non-protocol setting, particularly in a patient who says, I want the best therapy possible, you know, I'll pay for it, whatever?
I always use loading doses, even in the absence of data.
Do you get that reimbursed?
Yes, we go to the insurance companies, we write a letter of medical necessity, and I have not yet been turned down. I don't know that I've done it with Medicare. I don't think I've done it with Medicare, but with private insurances.
When you do that, if they ask for documentation, what do you give them?
I basically give them the controversy and say that virtually all of the current ongoing Fasilidex trials are using loading dose or high dose schedules.
What specific regimen or what specific schedule and dose do you use?
The dose that I've been using is I give 500 milligrams up front, I give another 500 milligrams at week 2, and then 250 milligrams per month.
At week 2, and then week 4 is when you start it?
That's when I start at 250.
This concludes our program. Special thanks to our speakers, and thank you for listening. This is Dr. Neil Love for Breast Cancer Update.